Okay, I think we'll get started now. Already pretty much behind the time, so I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Fyodor Andreyev from Western Illinois University.
Thank you.
Hello. I was thinking for quite some time about the title of my talk, and I decided that I present the material I have with the current title, and then at the end you suggest me the best title I should have used for that. It's very particular, it's very concrete material I like to talk about. The title emphasizes the idea of exploration. We will be exploring our plane and doing various kind of algorithms to paint the plane. So it's more about painting than three-dimensional, than shapes, two-dimensional, so we're three-dimensional and forms. And of course, I'm doing it in the context of polynomials, so the ingredients are, we would be using are polynomials, and we will be talking about root finding, but the roots themselves is not primary interest. What matters is the process of how we arrive to that, how we explore the polynomial. So the process here is more important than the result. Basically, what I'm trying to suggest here is a certain brush to use in painting. So I will explain later what I mean by that and why I'm talking about brush and not painting. So I'm not suggesting complete paintings or compositions. It's about particular brushes people use using certain other well-known techniques. We will be talking about algorithms, but very narrow kind of algorithms. There will be no new root finding algorithms themselves. It's rather more what we do with the existing root finding algorithms for that. Very briefly, I will describe the standard way to set up a fractal or to produce a picture corresponding to a polynomial and root finding technique. Basically, the algorithm goes over every point in the plane and assigns, here it is, almost got it, it starts with a point, it performs a mathematical algorithm, and then depending on the outcome of that algorithm, it assigns internally two numbers, usually two integer numbers to a point. Usually those two numbers represent speed of conversions, how many times, how many steps it took me to arrive to whatever the outcome of the algorithm is, and the result, where I ended up, like here, or maybe at some other place. In context of root finding, it usually means which root I have arrived to. That's what those two numbers usually mean. But the point, of course, is those two numbers can mean anything meaningful you can program, you can deal with. And after that, there is the coloring stage, where you take those two numbers and somehow convert them to colors. That so-called standard algorithm used in most fractals, and specifically the graphs you see here. In any kind of software, it usually works something like that. You say, I want to create an image. And you would see the well-known by now, zcube-1, which we often use to try various techniques and so on. And when you click here, at the bottom of the screen, it will show you that points, blah, 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 converges to the root, to one of the imaginary roots in 6 iterations. So there are 3 roots, 3 colors, and shades of the colors show the speed of conversions. It is to address one of the questions you had, I think, of what those shades and colors represent. Roots and the speed of conversions. That's the standard way. Nobody said that you couldn't interpret them. You couldn't convert them in colors in a different way. Now, here we go. I will not talk a lot about speed of conversions, it's just how many times it took. And the root index shows the root. And the coloring algorithm assigns the colors. That's what I was just describing. Mathematically, computationally wise, most of the time is spent finding those two integer numbers, the speed, number of iterations, and the root of convergence loop. Once we have those two numbers for every point, it is very fast to assign the colors to those. So we can easily recolor, repaint the model. You can see some typical results, the Newton's method for ZQ minus 1 and something like more complicated than that coming from a polynomial. And essentially to play with the colors on that picture, we don't need much. If we want to recolor that, it is fast process. In most fractal pictures, you will see those fractal plots. Plots where something interesting, something non-trivial is happening. One of the questions I had when I was thinking about it, can we predict where those plots be without too much computation, without real computation, without going through the entire process? It will be up to you to decide. So we're trying to predict where we would hit the interesting plots, where things will go non-trivial way. So the roots, the analog I use, the roots objects we see, so if we are at the root, there is some criterion that tells us we are at the root. If we're not at the root, there is a number that shows us how close we are from the root. And there are several numbers or functions you can use for that. I will be using the absolute value of the polynomial. So there is a polynomial for every point on the plane. You can compute the value, complex number, you can take that absolute value that shows how close you are to the root. If it's 0.01, you're close to the root. If it's 1,000, you're far from the root. And the analog with the game of button call, which I will describe briefly in a second, is we're thinking about that as indicates of how we are from the root, at the temperature. So the goal of that game, which I actually have played as a child, is to hide an object. And another person gives you hints of how close you are to the object by saying you're getting colder or hot, or it's hot or cold. Here it is. You can use both absolute indicators, hot, cold, and relative indicators, warmer, colder. Now, the other topic I want to address here is going from smooth and continuous, like the picture on the left. It is a plausible function in a sense, a smooth function, a polynomial of very small degree, to something like fractal. If you think about it, if you know the algorithms that produce those pictures, you see, well, there is no middle ground. And ultimately, well, it is. It is true. There is no really middle ground. But there is still something in between. There are some algorithms I would be looking at, some simple algorithms, which could be complicated enough and still continuous in a certain sense. And here is one method we can obviously think about. It is very simple. So here we have a polynomial, or we have a room, a big house with a lot of rooms, and we want to find an object on that. The simplest thing we can do is check every room in the house and ask the person, are we hot or cold? So we have an entire temperature map for the house. Well, it is possible to do that. Yeah.
Are you measuring the absolute temperature of the point or the relative temperature in comparison?
No, only the absolute value of T. That's the criterion I use.
Okay.
We can think about it as any numerical measure that tells us how close we are to the root.
That's what I'm asking, to the root or just the temperature of the point with respect to the polynomial?
Mathematically, I'm just doing absolute value of P. And if I happen to be unlucky and the absolute value is really small, but there is no root in the neighborhood of that point, well, so be it. So
okay.
It may happen. It is very naive in a sense. So basically, the ideas here follow that if it sounds right, it is probably right, which is mathematically, of course, not. The red areas, so we'll come up with a map showing how close we are to the roots. And it will look pretty boring for ZQ minus 1, that's the polynomial I investigate. Well, somewhere on the real axis there is real root 1, and there are two complex roots, and when we're getting away from that, we're getting colder. That's it. That's exactly what we expect. There are several problems here, both visually, it's not interesting, and algorithmically. Namely, we have to do it for every point, for every pixel, and there is no algorithm except just picking. And good algorithms have the property that even if you start very far, somewhere here, they will take you not just to the right pixel, because like pixel is like a big square. You can zoom in on that. When you're close to the root, you have to do the rediscretization of that. So you have to go from big grid, using Daniel's idea from like highways and so on, to smaller grid, to blocks. And good algorithms, they have a property such that in one step, they can take you from a highway to your place, if they're like really good. And here, just guessing, yeah, you can check like every highway, and then you check every block in the city, and then you check every house, and then you check every room. It is kind of silly, but that's a possible method. I will not spend too much time on the dictionary between terms, well, most people would understand, and more mathematical terms. Well, here they are mostly, instead of the temperature, I'm talking about the absolute value of P. I intentionally left here, left out the symbol of absolute value because it looks ugly already with like P of X. Essentially, we're talking about the measure how close we are to the root. So instead of saying that, it is just much easier to say temperature as a point, essentially meaning the same thing. The value of the function at the point, which we want to minimize if we want to find the root. Now, here is the second idea. And the point here is it's not something like really non-trivial. It doesn't take much time to think about it, but in the context of visualizing, I don't know too many examples of where it's been done. So the idea is here. Instead of checking every room, I'm asking the person I play with, if I enter that room, will it be hot or cold? So instead of measuring the temperature at where I'm at the point, I'm asking the person, if I follow my search strategy, what would be the temperature at the point I go next? If my search strategy is good, then I would be much closer to the root, to the object I see next time. So we wouldn't waste too much time in doing that. So it's kind of like running one step ahead of me, going forward in time, if you wish. And as you can see, there's much more red area, and the roots are much more visible, and so there's much less effort wasted in here. But of course, a new object has appeared that is this white circle thing in the middle. And that's because for the first time I'm using a search strategy. The first method didn't know about my search strategy. I just checked every room in the house. And here for the first time, I need to know, I need to have an algorithm in which order I go throughout the house. Like, what do I do? If you need to think about a particular algorithm, well, Newton's method, for instance, but there are plenty of others as well. Newton's method for ZQ minus 1 doesn't behave well at the origin. Dividing by 0 is never a good idea. That's the reason for appearance. Method 3. Now, how we can distinguish if we're close from the root or not close to the root? If I'm close to the root, and moving forward, probably there would be not much increase. I was already close. If I was far away from the root, and my next step takes me much closer to the root, perhaps there will be much relative increase in the temperature. So the third method, the third number we produce for every point could be relative increase or decrease in the temperature. The previous one were absolute methods. Again, all is ZQ minus 1. And we already start seeing some kind of behavior. There's like an alien looking face with three eyes. You can interpret it in some ways. And this is still normal. It still has the part in the middle where the problems with 0 begin. We still see three roots, but we have a lot of continuity here. I'm not quite right here. We have a continuity, but the complexity has increased. If we think about this mathematically, what we're doing here is we're plotting essentially that function, p P of the iteration divided by P of X, and I that's mathematical idea, so just see what I'm trying to say with it. If you think about polynomial of degree 3, well, for that picture, it is Newton's method for z cubed minus 1. So P is degree 3. Newton's method for that would be still degree 3. When you do the composition, P composed with the function, which in non-mathematical terms means I'm measuring the temperature at where I will be, at my next step. That's what it means. I already have mathematically polynomial of degree 9. So the complexity has increased dramatically, and it allows us to have something less trivial than before. Now, as you can see, I speak to method 8 here. And I will do that in a second. When I show you, very quickly, some of the pictures I produced with three methods in between, with the methods from 1, well, you will probably recognize that one. And I will be stopping only when the picture is worth talking to. That's still method 1. And the colors, I use green color as default. If you want to, if you hate it, well, I apologize and encourage you to try your own favorite color, pink or whatever it could be. I try simple polynomials for that case, and obviously we have some symmetry for that. Method 2. Well, that is still symmetric, but less trivial one, of course. Even with the second method.
What is the polynomial?
It is probably, again, the good thing about it is, well, we have control. So after some experimentation, you can see the location of the root. Those darkest spots, right, with the highest temperature, represent the root. So those four probably will give us z to the fourth minus 1. And the other four will give us z to the fourth plus 1 when we rotate it. And because we have the composition as the product of those two. So it's a polynomial of degree 8, apparently. Maybe the other roots are somewhat on the outside. So it's maybe z to the fourth plus 2 to shift the second ring away. That's probably what it is. Mm-hmm. For some of the pictures I'm showing, I wouldn't know myself what it is unless I look at the file with the information. Method 3, let me see real quick if I can find something. Well, that's the one I suggested for my talk. Not because it may be the most intriguing, but because, well, we have some symmetry if we want, and we have some shades, and so on. So there's still, it's still already worth talking to. There's both a round shape and curves in here. And that's, of course, with e to the 6 minus 1, but if you do the composition, it is already degree 2 to 6, which allows us to have enough complexity in here. And that's the pictures I used. Another polynomial in blue. Here's another one. Still probably the polynomial we just discussed, of degree 8. And sometimes strange things happen. If you zoom in, for instance, you will have some kind of noise, which algorithmically wise you shouldn't have for polynomials of degree 9. You can't have noise. Well, the good thing about programming is it produces things you didn't want. So, well, here's one example. For method 4, there are very few. That one is maybe the simplest one. I'm not describing what method 4 is. It's on the same level of difficulty I used before. And the non-trivial thing for me, it has some spikes. The curve you see is discontinuous. I mean, it is continuous, but it has some spikes. As you know, it doesn't happen with, let's say, polynomials or lines of degree 1, and just lines. Polynomials of degree 2 will give you parabolas, if you remember the talk we had yesterday, and so on. With curves of higher degree, it is possible to have complexity, but that method also has spikes, which is the shape. You may like or hate the shape. and you can think about the meaning of that, but maybe no meaning, but it does have something for this one. It has non-trivial shapes in it. And this one, love it or hate it, but it does produce some non-trivial results. Before we go to maybe, I will probably skip methods 5 and 6. For method 4, let me see. If I can show the squares, when did we find the squares? In probably in here. Okay, I got them. Radmila, would you like to maybe say some words about the squares somewhat represent your you can be talking and I can just scroll through that.
This is sort of a surprise. So, for all of you who were in my talk yesterday, this is a family of polynomials which corresponds to the family of graphs that we constructed yesterday, which again corresponds to family of links that are just basic polyhedral knots of type 2n in Conway notation, well, 2n star. And these represent chromatic polynomials. So, well, feather's going backwards, I guess, so knight's going forward. It's chromatic polynomial that can, so the graphs that you're talking about can be thought of as pyramids with, let's say, so the first one corresponds to a pyramid with a base, a square base, and one point at the top, then it's pentagon and one point at the top. And so on. So these plots represent zeros of their chromatic polynomials.
Thank you. Radmila was kind of, so I suggested several methods I'm showing you. And Radmila, in her case, chose that method. I myself experimented with some other methods just to see how the same polynomial can be represented. So from you see the pictures of the same polynomial now. So I chose one of that series, and I tried several ways to represent the same one. And maybe you still like the green squares, maybe you like the bluish one. The colors are kind of arbitrary. I can easily change them. The shapes, whatever shapes are, I can't. That's the point. I tried similar things with. What Ruth was showing with one of the polynomials, Ruth and Ludwig?
Walter
and Petra, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. This morning I remembered the names. I actually have them written down, but you see I'm not looking anywhere, so I'm sorry. And I tried with a couple of my first methods, and they didn't produce interesting results. And then after that, that's method 8, which I will be returning to in a second, hopefully. Still method 8, for the same polynomial, maybe different area. That's I'm not sure what it is. You see, I don't have good names for those methods, so I call them method 1, 2, 3, and I often forget, well, who's who. So the ideas are, I call them like maybe like if I need to give words, or I call them relative plotting or something when we like running ahead. So sometimes I wouldn't know. I don't have names, and that's one of the reasons I appreciate being here, is people, smart people can suggest good names for the methods. That's another, the same polynomial zoomed in and some method is used. That's still method 8 I will be talking about in a second. And out of 9 or 10 methods I have, that's probably the last method I will cover. That's the last one. To my knowledge, it's still method 8, but used with different root finding technique. So I kind of did the same thing with the way I was assigning colors is the same, but the way I was searching the house is different, basically. So there are plenty, well, infinitely many root finding techniques. Okay, and depending on which one you use, you can get very different results. This one surprisingly has a shape. Essentially, is what you see is there are, in terms of rows, there are essentially only two rows here. pure complexly conjugated rules. One's here, the other one is over there. The polynomial is degree 6 or 8, I'm not quite sure. It's, and of course it has real coefficients. One of the surprising things, for instance, for me was the polynomial has real coefficients, and most algorithms will produce a symmetric picture. Picture with symmetric with respect to mirror image, with respect to x-axis. Here is the symmetry breaks. The x-axis is just the middle part of that. So shape-wise, it does have the symmetry. In terms of the little areas, no, the symmetry obviously breaks. And how it happens, I have an idea. It's not something as simple. I don't have simple explanation for that, and I don't have definite explanation for that. It's only an idea which is worth exploring. How, why the symmetric algorithm for symmetric polynomial breaks the symmetry. And that's maybe our last one for that series. And let me just grab, let me now get to the PowerPoint and describe that one. Okay, I should be looking for that symbol. Here we go. And skip to this map, which I call, I think it's not a bad name, but your suggestions are welcome, decreasing sequence. If you think about any fractal algorithm, most typical fractal algorithms, there are two traditionally ways to stop the algorithm. One is when we're no longer moving anywhere. When next iteration is the same pretty much as the previous one. So if I go somewhere, I'm fine. If I slow down and my steps get smaller and smaller, perhaps there is no need for me to go further. I am where I should be. So we use previous iterations, we compare previous iterations with the current one, and if they're close, we stop. That's the standard way to use it. In presence of polynomials, and that's one of the luxuries to have polynomials, so be doing root finding in general, we can use another, of course, natural criterion, and we can stop the iterations if the temperature is small enough, if we or high enough, if we found the object. So if the absolute value of polynomial is less than a certain number, then we stop the iterations. That's another natural criterion to stop. This one uses a slightly different idea. It says the following. We will continue iterations till the temperature does what we want. Okay? If we want the temperature to increase, we keep doing the iterations till temperature increases. If we're doing the root finding, we will be doing the root, we will keep iterating until the absolute value suddenly jumps. As soon as it jumps, we stop. Oh, that's it. There's no like really mathematical reason to believe that it should be a reasonable thing to do, because maybe you should try two or three attempts, because maybe you jump somewhere else. Maybe before you find the object you see, you have to share some rooms which do not have the object, or very far away from the object. Only after that, you will start deriving that. And mathematically, it does happen for most algorithms. But at least naively, it's not a terribly bad idea to try. And these are some of the images for the method that A's for non-decreasing sequence. I tried, and the thing here is they do produce various images, and you can play with them. And the coloring, of course, for some reason I chose brown for that, although brown is my maybe favorite color. This one is also the same method, and that surprisingly does create an illusion that those shapes are kind of on top of each other. It's like you take a shape. And that's a copy of that slightly on top. Most of the images produced in these things are really two-dimensional, which I kind of like. There are several, well, types of people, I think, like in the world or in this audience, and all are presented here. Some are two-dimensional, and some are three-dimensional, and some of us are four-dimensional. I'm a strong believer in two-dimensional. I mean, can't explain. That's everything that is, to me, in the world. But I do appreciate, also I don't quite understand, the work of artists, of sculptors, who work with three dimensions. Four dimensions, because it is two complex variables, I may be interested, but it does create some obvious problems. So that one does have some kind of illusion of one shape being on top of the other. Why it happens, I don't know. Well, thank you for attention so far. There is one little piece, not in the presentation. It is kind of weird.
And in some sense, it isn't the program. It is the exploration and kind of playing with the software our Bachmann was working on with my help. We're in 2-3 minutes, I'll show you maybe 2-3 images on how I basically play with them. The intention here would be that I'm not really saying it's only a way of painting certain, it's a brush basically. So if you have an interesting idea for a shape, you would need to produce that shape somehow. You would need to choose a composition, you would need to choose like proportions and so on. And only after that, if you're interested in my particular shapes, in my particular brushes, you might find the talk interesting. There are plenty of other brushes, of course, and shapes polynomiography can produce. I'm not covering them here, not because they are not interesting, they are, but because I assume that to a certain extent they are known. So before I return to the last slide of my presentation to properly thank you, let me try several standard techniques in the software for playing with. So first, and that's the first to me, your sequence may be different. I think about polynomial, and the good thing again about that is we do have some control on where the roots would appear, so we have some control over the image. I'm thinking about maybe not completely symmetrical one, sort of like cross-like. So maybe 3 roots on the real axis, maybe something like that. Because I want 2 symmetric roots, let me immediately square those. Z squared minus 1, that gives me immediately 2 roots, and 1 root at maybe 2, and 2 complex roots at z squared plus 1. And I would produce a Newton's method for that. That's the picture for that, the standard picture for that polynomial, but it's by no means the unique picture you can produce. Before we go and try some coloring methods, let me do things that makes Newton's method interesting, and it is double one of the roots. Well, how about I double 2 of the roots here? Making multiple roots makes Newton's method less trivial, generally speaking. And maybe zoom in slightly. And you can recompute if you want. The paths we haven't talked about in my presentation are the actual algorithm, the actual searching strategy. And there are plenty of them. A lot of them are covered in Bachmann's book. With multiple root, you may decide to try something like multiple root basic family. And again, like nobody really tells you that you have to use multiple root basic family. You can just try. And if you like the previous image better, well, that is your choice. So one of the things we found in Western Illinois on Girls Plus Math Camp, and of course Irash was talking about that, that it is really beauty that, well, we give children that tool, not necessarily children, and let them play with it. So nobody tells students, well, this is a list of problems you have to solve. It's children set up goals or problems for themselves. Nobody tells them, well, okay, you have to do problem number 8. You say, well, here it is, well, here in 5 minutes. The learning curve, steep learning curve, well, one of the things that was addressed in the previous talk. The learning curve of that is maybe 10-15 minutes, as our experience with girls show. Can it be improved? Of course. Can the design be improved? Yes, of course, and that's one of the reasons we are interested in your suggestions. There are many ways to do that. And so that is the mathematics of that. So for every point we found the two numbers, let's say where the point converges, it shows that point converges, blah, 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 blah. And after that, if you want to experiment with colors, there are built-in schemes which you can immediately try. For instance, how about blue and red? That's already something to kind of talk about. If you've seen some like stones, I think they call them calcite or whatever, like that are like egg-like stones, if you cut, you will see some bluish image with some hints of red sometimes. That one in particular maybe doesn't look quite like a stone. Some of the images do. For me, it's more like a space, maybe, an object's moving into space, like in osmosis. Do I pronounce that right?
Excuse me?
The game, you... Osmosis?
Osmosis.
Okay. Okay. My son played with it and showed it to me last year. He was really impressed with that. Okay. So that's basically what it is. Zpart I was talking about, so I haven't used any of the methods to produce that image. None of the methods I'm talking about in my talk. Right now, they're in a very experimental stage. They're very well hidden, so not user-friendly at all. I call them advanced methods, well, but it is actually the opposite of the truth. If you remember the description of methods 1, 2, 3, they are kind of basic. Method 8, a somewhat more sophisticated decreasing sequence or non-increasing sequence. Non-increasing sequence, of course, is not a good name. So technically, it is non-increasing sequence, but decreasing sequence sounds at least simpler. So do we have to be truthful to the method, or we just have to use good names? It's up to us to decide. While it's computing, it should take maybe like 30 seconds to compute the dust, because now method 8 is essentially fractal in the following sense, that it records number of iterations. So of course there is a big difference between plotting a function of any kind, a complex plane or anything, and computing iterations. Because when we do iterations, we do have boundaries, we do have jumps from one state to another. For instance, if I measure the distance to the edge, it is always some continuous quantity. If I count how many steps it takes me to reach a certain goal, I count it's an integer number, which suddenly jumps. If I started further, it would take me more steps. So it suddenly jumps from 7 steps to 8 steps. If I ask what time that is, and I will not because I'm afraid I'm running over, I imagine that it's 11 hours something. And of course, because of continuity, if I wait just a little bit, it will be still 11 hours something. But all of a sudden, in some time, it will jump to 12. And that's what we see in those shapes, that they do jump from one area to the next one. This one, again, didn't produce too many colors. It produced some complicated shape where, if you remember, the intention was to play with the cross, essentially. 3 points here and 2 points here. Well, can you recognize that here? Of course, I zoomed in, so those white areas would represent now the location of those points. Well, does it look like that? Well, probably not. Is it my intention? Did I absolutely have to make it look like a cross? Absolutely not. It was just an idea of a composition, of making good proportions. So golden ratio, if you like golden ratio, locate your points in such configuration that it will show golden ratio. Here it is. And I would like to thank you for your attention and organizers for inviting me.
A couple of questions before a break.
Many thanks for your nice lecture. I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And I have two remarks. One remark, I think the loss of symmetry depends on that mm-hmm. the place of action is a Möbius plane, and you can also add Möbius transformations to it and not disturbing anything. The other remark is mm-hmm. the polynomials, they form a ring. So and you have now sort of bijection, from a polynomial to a basic image using one method. So it would be nice to have a sort of operation between the images, mm-hmm. add images, multiply images, mm-hmm. so that you can restrict to basic functions like the symmetric basic polynomials, and then construct more complicated images such that we have a tool mm-hmm. to get a certain image.
Mm-hmm. To some extent, we do have some of that in the already existing software. For instance, you can compose polynomials, and you can multiply polynomials. And depending on your interest, if you're like a mathematician or educator, of course, multiplying polynomials does make a lot of sense, because what happens is, if I have two polynomials with these roots and another polynomial with those roots, when I multiply, the product has all those roots. So it's like taking the union, it's combining the sets. So you can take that, you can take a picture, and you can take another picture and you can multiply them in a sense. And what happens if the first picture has three colors and the other picture has four colors, the overall picture will have 12 roots, and you can teach those things to kids. And not only you may, but it actually it is possible. Some people who experimented with that shows that somehow students unconsciously learn, even if they call those things wrong names, as some students do. I mean, I come from a four-year university where we have a variety of students. They still learn unconsciously. So one of the things that is kind of difficult, which I can't demonstrate in 5 minutes, regarding the software and overall ideas, that it shows two things. First, it does demonstrate that the subject we studied, polynomials and roots, have enough complexity. It was not obvious before, like root finding, well, Newton's method, like, well, there are plenty of other methods that produce significantly different outcomes. So the area itself has enough complexity to study. Secondly, by playing with it, by interacting with it, you learn. Although even if you can't formulate what you learn, you still kind of remember how to place the roots to produce the outcome you want, how to use the composition idea or the multiplication idea. Or in case of polynomials having common roots, you can even add them and still the roots will be preserved. So you still you learn a lot just by experimenting with it, and that's of course one of the things we're trying to encourage.
Thank you.
When you asked that question, I computed that image too, because for me, if you see those bands, that's by the way z to the 6 minus 1, and you have 6 fold symmetry. Those bands do remind me of one of the pictures you showed. From a German artist, Goose. And
maybe it transforms of a function.
And well, this is not. I mean, it's just z to the 6 minus 1, and somehow it produces those bands, which independently I see, for instance, when I was producing the images for most intriguing, this one, well, the snowflake, it does have similar bands on the outside. If you go further from that, there will be similar bands for z to the 6 minus 1. So it's the same polynomial, but the method is completely different. And why it happens? So there are many things we would not know. For instance, how I produced that image. I may or may not remember that. Let me find one. Well, the appearance of those shades, the point of my talk was about brushes. So one of my brushes is like that. It has like points. It's maybe like French style of pointism. I don't remember. I don't know what's the word for that. This one is, I'm thinking about characters from South Park meeting. If you look at them like above, you would see like two little eyes if you come closer, and those are their heads, and you're on top of them and you're looking at that. So there are many images you can produce just like experimenting with it. It was, I think that was actually the longest answer to the questions we had so far.
Okay, well, I'd thank our speaker again. Before the next session.